This is In the Hive, a show that looks at the issues and ideas that tie the Greater Salt Lake Valley together. I'm Emily Means, and today on the show, I spoke with Peter Bromberg, Executive Director at the Salt Lake City Public Library, who recently marked his one-year anniversary in that position. We discussed some changes that have occurred at the library over the last year, including city approval of a bigger budget and the elimination of overdue fines, as well as what's in store for the future. First of all, you brought in the loudest fanny pack I have ever seen. What is this? Please explain what's going on here.
Well, I wanted to give you a preview of something we haven't announced yet. Even internally, a lot of people don't know. We're doing a lot of things with local music. We have a really well-developed local music collection. And one of the things that we're going to be launching very soon is a new discovery kit. And the fanny pack that you're seeing is kind of gold and glittery. And this is our local punk rock discovery kit for mixtapes. And so you can see we have three actual cassette tapes, old style,
wow.
You know. And the discovery kit comes with a small
cassette player. You need one in the discovery kit because
sure.
No one has one anymore, right?
Exactly. So it's just a fun way of being a little retro and helping to expose some of the amazing music that's being created in our community and circulating it in a way that we think will be fun for patrons.
That's very cool. And maybe we can talk more about the discovery kits. People can check these out just with their regular library card?
That's correct, yeah. We have discovery kits that include sewing machines, telescopes. There's a whole range of things that are non-traditional, you know, beyond the book, beyond the CD, that are really designed to promote learning, but also exposure to local art and culture, and just in a fun way, in a very interactive way.
Yeah, this is the funnest fanny pack I've ever seen in my life. But you and I have actually spoken before
sure.
about a proposed tax increase to help pad the library's budget. And after a few public hearings and a city council vote, the outcome is an increase from $18.1 million to $22.4 million. And it looks like it mostly affects property taxes. Is that correct?
The library has an independent property tax line that people can see on their bill. And for the homeowner of an average price home in Salt Lake City, we estimated that the tax would go up about $20. And I'm happy to talk about what that $20 buys. In addition to testifying in front of the city council, I and colleagues also made the rounds and testified in front of just about, not really testified, but presented in front of all of the community councils around Salt Lake City. And so we really wanted to be as transparent as possible and really get a lot of input from the community. And that was really useful to see that there was great support for the tax increase and for the reasonings behind it.
Let's talk more about what you'll be doing with this extra money. Why exactly was the increase needed?
I'm going to suggest that it wasn't extra money or padded money. It was money that we needed to operate. And the three main reasons why was one, we had opened two new branches, Glendale and Marmalade, within the last two years. And those branches, the good news is, are heavily used, both in terms of just the door count, the number of people coming through the door, the number of people attending programs, but also the community spaces that are there as well. The Marmalade meeting room is just used by the community, just most hours of the days and nights. So it's a very heavily well-used space. Well, when we got the approval to bond to build those buildings, at the time, there was no additional money given to operate. And at the time, we had some money in savings, and the city council at that time said, open the buildings, and when you run them for a year or two, you have some savings to run them. You'll have a true sense of what the actual cost is, and then come back and ask for a tax increase to cover that. So about $1.5 million of that right off the bat was just for the operations of those two buildings, because we had been funding it out of savings for a year or two, but that...
Using your rainy day funds
for
these two branches.
Our fund balance, yeah. So we couldn't continue to do that. So that was about half of that right there. About the other half was a new fund that we've added to the budget, which is what we're calling a designated fund for long-term maintenance of our facilities and our technology. So as you mentioned, I started just over a year ago, and coming in as a new director, one of the first things you do is to say, show me the budget, show me the plan, let's get a handle on that. And I looked at the budget and I got a little queasy feeling in my stomach, because I realized we have these eight amazing buildings, including the one that we're here right now, right? 240,000 square feet, two brand new buildings. Chapman turns 100 next year, Sprague turns 90 next year. And I didn't see that we had a long-term saving plan for taking care of these buildings, because we could do maintenance year to year, But of course, there's eight roofs and eight HVAC systems and eight plumbing systems and electrical systems. And when a roof goes or an HVAC system goes, that could be $1 million or $2 million. So it's like if you're not saving a little bit along the way, when that happens, then you're just going to have to eat into your maintenance money. So we've added $900,000 a year. That's like a savings account that when we passed a policy to limit how we can spend that. So my hands are really tied around how we can spend that money. It really has to just go to this long-term maintenance of the buildings. And then another $600,000 similar for our technology that, again, technology, you buy a few $100,000 worth of computers and servers, et cetera. They have a life cycle. That life cycle ends, and you need $500,000 to replace that in 1 year. And if you're not saving along the way, you're going to be in trouble. So I feel really good about the fact that we passed those two elements of the budget. And the third piece was really just a goal to make all of our locations and facilities safe and welcoming for everyone in the community. And so some of that goes to some additional security, additional custodial, and additional maintenance staff that I really thought we were understaffed on. So we've addressed those issues, and I'm real pleased about that.
Why was it important for the library to pass that policy designating what those funds actually go towards?
It was really going to being transparent, and really it's good governance that sometimes government agencies might say, hey, we need this money for a specific purpose, or this is for long-term maintenance. And unfortunately, across the country, deferred maintenance is a problem, where you see bridges and roads, they just don't get taken care of. And so we were asking specifically for money for taking care of these buildings. And I wanted to make a promise to the city council and to the people of Salt Lake that if you pass this budget and then give us this money to take care of the facilities and the technology, we're not going to turn around and say, oh, look, there's something shiny over there. We want to build a new, maker lab, or we want to do something fancy or innovative. I mean, we do want to do things that are innovative, but I wanted to make a promise that that money would not be used for those purposes. It would only be used for long-term maintenance, and that's passed by our board once a year, and then we bring that to the city council. And once that's passed, my hands are pretty tied. I can't say, oh, actually, I want to use that money for something else now.
So remaining accountable to taxpayers and people who utilize library services, let's talk even more about money.
Sure.
I think I've got this date right. On July 1st, the city library stopped charging fines for overdue items.
We did.
Library systems throughout the nation have been implementing this policy. Why was it important for the city library to also jump on board with this?
When you ask people why does the library have fines to begin with, they'll say, to make sure that the stuff comes back on time. Well, there's enough evidence from libraries that have gotten rid of fines that there's really no difference. When you get rid of fines, stuff still comes back. And that's, if you talk to people and say, why do you bring things back on time? Fines is way down on the list. And there's been some research about this that shows that people bring things back because it's due, because they get a reminder, because they know that someone else is waiting for it. The fine really isn't that motivational thing that we believe it is, but what fines actually do is act as an inequitable barrier of service for people that want to use the library. So what happens is if you're blessed enough to have a high salary and you're comfortable and you have some books out and maybe you bring your family and you check out 30 picture books and they're a few days late and that could add up quickly to $10, $15, $20 of late fees, well, okay, I'll pay the $15 or $20. If you're a single parent with three kids and you're trying to get by, and you have that same $30 bill. A brief anecdote here. When I get in a cab or a Lyft or an Uber, I always like to say, I'm here for the library conference or I'm a librarian, and then pause to see what someone says. They'll either say, oh, the library, I love it, or oh, libraries, they still have those things, or,
We'll talk about that later.
And my Lyft driver, Chandria, said, I love the library. I grew up walking distance to a branch library. Me and my siblings used to go to the library, and it was wonderful. And she paused and she says, I have three kids, but I don't let them use the library. And I said, what? How old are they? And she said, they're 7, 11, and 15. Why don't you let them use the library? And she said, because of those deadlines that you have, she says, it's like having an extra credit card bill at the end of every month that I can't afford. And so libraries across the country that have started to get rid of fines have heard a variation on this theme, and I've shared this story with my staff too, and they'll say, yep, I got 10 more stories just like that. Now that we've gotten rid of fines, people are coming back saying, I can afford to use the library again. One of the interesting things looking at our statistics was our three branches on the west side, not including Marmalade, but Chapman, Day Riverside, and Glendale, account for about 14% of all the materials that are checked out, but those same patrons accounted for over 30% of all the cards that we had blocked for financial reasons. And again, you see this across the country where it's hitting people who can least afford it and arguably most need the library. So it cost us about $75,000 to get rid of the fines. But what we're seeing just in the first month of statistics that I've looked at for July is that circulation is up. So we expect that. So more things are circulating. But also number of borrowers are up, which means more people are using the library, and new card registrations are also up. And all those things had been trending slightly downward. So what we're seeing is what we expected to see, is that when you get rid of fines, people who have been previously disenfranchised can now come back and use the library. And that's really great. And this impacts a lot of children as well. And the research around how important it is to teach children reading and help them develop a love of reading and build their vocabulary, how that serves them across their academic career and when they come into the economy. This small investment that we're making now saves us from kids who might not do well in school and who might be as well positioned to get good jobs in the marketplace further down the road. So it's a good investment.
So you said $75,000 is about how much it cost you. What do you mean by that number?
In looking at how much we stood to lose by getting rid of fines, fines have been trending downward in any case, because while our circulation is one of those library words. I mean, it's how many actual things get checked out. The number of physical items has been going down, but our number of electronic items that circulate go up. Well, there's no fines for returning an e-book late or an audiobook late, because they automatically get checked back in. So our fines have been trending downwards anyway, and we expected to collect about $150,000 in fines this year. But when we started talking about getting rid of fines, our head of circulation said, well, what if we also turned on automatic renewal, which is something else that many libraries have done. And what that means is, if you have something checked out and the due date comes and no one else is waiting for it, then it just gets automatically renewed. Hmm. Because why penalize you to bring something back to put it on the shelf when no one else is waiting for it? We'd rather you have it in your home and you're enjoying it and you're reading it than have it sit on a shelf. So we've turned on automatic renewals, and based on the experience of other libraries, when automatic renewals are turned on, that drops fines by half, as you can imagine, because they're not being charged anymore. So we had anticipated collecting $150,000, but now with the automatic renewals, we can estimate easily that would have been cut to about $75,000. So out of a $22 million budget, it's a third of a percent. And what we're getting for that one-third of 1% of our budget is inviting back all of the people who are in and of themselves taxpayers and have a right to library service, so that they can, we're removing that barrier that's really unnecessary.
So you said more people have been circulating items. Mm-hmm. Have you heard any feedback from some of these people who haven't been into the library for a while because of fines?
Yeah, I've been walking through the library and through our branches, and I have been really probing with our staff to say, so what are you hearing? And really kind of digging for, like, are you hearing anything negative? Are there any negative? Everyone say, it's great, we love it, the patrons love it. And definitely that variation on the theme, I've heard over and over again that people are saying, I stopped using the library because I couldn't afford it, and I'm back now. So we're hearing that anecdotally over and over again, and we're seeing that reflected in our usage statistics as well.
Let's take a look maybe into the future,
sure,
bit, Peter. And something that I want to touch on, the Salt Lake City Mayor's Office, Jackie Biskupski, mm-hmm, has this vision for Library Square and mm-hmm this downtown campus area. So, of course, Library Square is right across from the City and County Building, and just to the east of it is the Public Safety Building. And mm-hmm, and part of the vision is to kind of connect this whole block to make it a more cohesive community center. I'm wondering how the library fits into that vision, if you've been a part of any of these talks.
Yeah, we've been very involved in talking with Downtown Alliance and UMOCA, Leonardo, the Film Center, and the city as well, to try to begin a process here, a public process of visioning that. And I guess a few months back, the ULI, Urban Land Institute, did a two-day what they call TAP, a technical assistance panel, and it's really all about collecting information from the public and from local stakeholders, and at the end of those 2 days, presenting a report, which is available online, I believe, off Downtown Alliance website. So we've been very involved in that, and I think our role there is really that, along with the Leonardo, we're really the anchor here. We drive an amazing amount of foot traffic to this location. I'd like to say that when, if you look up on TripAdvisor, there's a list of 500 top things to do in Salt Lake City. Number 16 is go to this public library right here. And we have a lot of not just local people coming, but people from across the country and international, because this the building itself is very well known and an icon. So we bring a lot of people here. And the Leonardo as well is an anchor. And so once people are here, though, the question is what else can they do? And what will bring them here as opposed to a specific program if we can get enough activity happening here on the plaza that you don't know what's going on, but you know something is, so we're going to go. It doesn't matter what age we are, right? So I think that goal is the word activation really comes up over and over again, that how do we activate this space so that, again, we attract people and that there's a variety of things to do that are interactive and engaging once you're here. And so it's wonderful. This process has already led to a pilot project with the library, UMOCA, Leonardo, and the Film Center to really do some more intentional programming together. So the Tumbleweeds Film Festival, which is coming up in March, we've been meeting as a group. We're calling ourselves Library Squared. but to say, well, you know, the Film Center is going to have this amazing annual event. Let's all of us, Leonardo, UMOCA, Library, and Film Center, do some programming around it to really leverage that event. And so this is a little bit of a pilot, but I will say there's a lot of energy happening there, and I expect that we'll continue to build on this. And it really came out of these discussions that we began having about activation of Library Square.
And the library serves a pretty diverse population. Mm-hmm. There are, of course, quite a few people experiencing homelessness on Library Plaza and mm-hmm. utilizing library resources. Do you have any plans to program specifically for the homeless in the future? Or maybe even right now? I don't know how you might be working with them.
Yeah, so there's a number of things. I mean, you know, first and foremost, what the library does is simply provide a place that anyone, any citizen, any resident, anyone can come in and be welcomed, and that we can meet you where you are. So if you need computer access, we can computer access. If you need one-on-one help using the Foundation Center, if you need a 3D printer, we can do that. If you just need a place where someone can look you in the eye and say good morning, we have that too. We're in our strategic planning process right now. One of the things we've been doing is doing some real in-depth interviews with library patrons. These interviews can last 90 minutes to 2 hours. And one of the questions we ask is, what can the library help you become? And we're asking this to community groups as well. And we're hearing things like, you can help me become a better parent. You can help me become a published author. And one of our patrons who's experiencing homelessness said, you can help me become less lonely. Right, and so you can start to see the diversity of what people's needs are when they come through the door. And so on the one hand, we really don't distinguish between, oh, this person's homeless and this person's not. You're a patron, you're welcome here. We want to understand what it is you need and then be able to meet you at that place. But beyond that, we do understand that there is a population that comes to the library that may have no other place to go. And so we have our partnership with the Volunteers of America, which has been very successful. So we provide space, both public space on the first floor and administrative and storage space up on the fifth floor for the VOA, so that they can do what they do well as social workers. They can form those relationships and then direct people to appropriate services, right? So that's something that we invest time and energy in, that partnership and in giving of space to that. The Tai Chi that's been happening on Library Square that has been very popular and has grown and gotten some good press, et cetera.
Right, led by Bernie Hart.
Led by Bernie Hart, yes. We have been in talks with Bernie to have a more formal relationship. So up until this point, the library, that hasn't been a library program per se. That's just been happening on the public square, which is really city property. That the library square is called Library Square, but it's not the libraries per se. But on days where there's inclement weather and if it's cold, we've partnered with Bernie to provide space inside the library for the Tai Chi to happen. And that's been very successful. So we're talking about how can we partner in a more formal way and do things like make this a co-sponsored library program where we're also putting resources behind it to help advertise it, maybe do some on the roof, like we have the rooftop yoga. And so those conversations are happening, and really excited about formalizing that partnership with him. And then beyond that, once a year we have been doing a one-day program for homeless services. So we gather people from all across the city, different service providers, people who do haircuts, people who can coach on doing a resume, people who can just coach on, you know, how do you get your Social Security check and where can you find affordable housing. And we do a whole day programming, and that has grown into Project Homeless Connect, which is now a citywide event that will be happening in early October, and I should have those dates. I think it's the 4th or 5th. And so it's really grown, and it's going to be over at the Salt Palace. The library has been a key partner in working with the city and other partners to grow that and deliver that. We expect about 600 or 700 attendees there, and it's wonderful to see how the work that we were doing annually in doing our version of Project Homeless Connect has grown into this citywide event.
So you mentioned the library's strategic plan. Let's talk a little bit more about that. I'd like to address it in the context of the future of the library in the traditional sense. So we think of libraries as repositories for books and more recently for multimedia resources. But as all of those items become more widely available digitally, does the need for libraries become obsolete?
The purpose of libraries, I think, is solid and remains. And what changes is not the purpose, but how we operationalize that, or how do we look to our core mission and core values of intellectual freedom, of preserving local history, of supporting learning and literacy, and how do we do that in the 21st century as opposed to the 19th or 20th century? So there's still a need for the things that libraries do. And if you look across the country, and certainly here in Salt Lake City, library services are booming. Right, so that, I think it was Mark Twain who had said, you know, reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated. You know, I mean, 23 years ago, when the internet first hit, 1994, 95, people said, well, that's the end of libraries. And then, but when there's an information boom, people now need to know, well, how do I navigate in this sea of information, right? And, you know, libraries have always been about literacy, and that's core to our mission. And we do story times that have a research base to them to help not just the kids learn vocabulary, but to help caregivers so that they can, the other 23 hours a day that they're not here at the library, can help their kids to develop vocabulary. But that's just one type of literacy. And in the 21st century, there's talk about what other literacies are needed for us to be successful, right, academically and economically. And so there's technological literacies. And beyond that, there's 21st century skill sets such as collaboration, problem solving, pattern recognition. And so libraries are very intentionally designing programs and spaces to support that. And so we have a creative lab and a technology lab, and we have a coding club for kids. So at 8 years old, we're helping kids learn coding, but it's not just the learning of coding, that it's also happening collaboratively. So they're learning those collaborative skills, it's problem solving, it's pattern recognition, and these are the types of skills, and these are the literacies that are going to position these children for success, you know, when they're graduating high school, college, etc. So those core principles of lifelong learning, literacy, as well as civic engagement and being that neutral space in the community where we can come and have a discussion about the siting of homeless shelters. We can have a discussion if there's a shooting when Abdi Muhammad was shot a few years ago and Marmalade just opened. We, you know, there was a community came together in that room there to have that discussion. And there's really something about a civic discussion, even a highly emotional one that happens in a library space, that somehow seems to foster a civility that might not happen if it was outside of the library. And I've seen this over and over again. I've been in libraries for 25 years. There's something about people's respect for that space, that there's a recognition that the library fundamentally doesn't have an agenda. We're providing a space to have those conversations. So that's historically something libraries have always done. I think it's just something public libraries are doing more intentionally. Perhaps communities are recognizing increasingly the value of that.
I think it's because they know they need to use their inside voices in the library.
No. You know, it might be on some level that could be true. It could be true. But I've seen it over and over again. It's fascinating to see how respectful, even when people are expressing, have a great deal of emotion, it's directed in a way that's respectful and civil.
That was Peter Bromberg, Executive Director at the Salt Lake City Public Library. How do you utilize the library? What kind of programming or changes would you like to see in the future? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW 88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of this program on our website, kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.